Ladies and gentlemen, Patreon members, today's episode was even more challenged by my lifestyle than the background noise, the things that were happening. I had tractors, I had bulldozers, buildings were falling down, I moved inside, young children were crying, mothers were weeping, prams, chairs were being screeched. But throughout the madness and the capers, the show had to go on, and we had Jim Bianco. Jim's a great mind. He's a kind of, you know, he comes up with narrative and the challenge, and it was an opportunity to challenge the narrative. With a lot of these formats, of course, you have to kind of listen to long narratives, one versus the other. One of these days, I'm going to crack it. I didn't hear anything if we're doing post the interview. I still didn't hear, and I don't hear it from others, how a fractured US financial system can actually generate the credit expansion, that is the loan growth, the risk-seeking appetite from banks and other financial intermediaries. I don't see it. And I find it's very necessary that we get, really, to meet these inflation expectations and concerns, we need to be seeing loan growth in the 7, 8, 9, 10% year over year consistently. I ain't seeing that anywhere. And that's one of the fundamental reasons why I believe that the inflation will continue to come down. Secondly, yeah, you can receive a pay award, 6, 7, 8%, and you're very deserving. I hope you're very deserving of it. But my problem is I've got an $18 trillion economy in China, and the folks there never get paid commensurate with the productivity that they add. And that gap ain't narrowing. It's probably going to widen given the travails of the Chinese economy. So the notion that the Western labor market, which has been under the cosh of all of this overcapacity for 3-4 decades, the notion that now that the Chinese currency is really on the edge, now that their economy is really, really struggling with the GDP calculator, the notion that it's going to get easier or that... Yeah, easier that somehow we're in this disconnected world where you can pay yourself 7, 8, 9, 10% and those jobs don't disappear overseas. I still find that a huge reach. But we'll continue with that debate and we'll continue thinking about it. And I will continue to ask for your patience and your patronage. So I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Love from St. Bart's, where the summer camp begins at the weekend. Oh, thank you. Over to you.
Okay.
I'm listening.
Okay, you want to? So if we want to start, let me start with rates. I have taken the view you talked about mean reversion, and I'm agreeing with you on mean reversion. But I'm going to mean revert in a different direction. I think the 39-year bull market in bonds ended in August of 2020 when we hit 51 basis points in the 10-year note. And now we're at 430 on the 10-year note the day that we're recording. And this is a new 16-year high. Ultimately, I think that we're in a period of a multi-year rise in rates. In fact, we're entering year 4 of that rise in rates, just completing 3 years right now. Sure, there will be some cyclical pullbacks in it, but now the trend is higher. And I think the reason that the trend is higher is we are in a new economic cycle that began with the COVID lockdowns and restart of the economy. Coming out of it, things are different. And one of the things that I think is different is we're going to have persistently higher inflation. We have it around the world. We've had, 15 months in a row now that Japan has had inflation of more than 2%, and they're trying to hold their interest rates at 60 basis points. That's not going to work long term. Europe is, on the core levels, is making new highs. And there's lots of evidence right now that the U.S. might have cyclically hit the low of the year of inflation. I'm talking about year-over-year inflation in June. And it's going to start back up. And I think that interest rates are responding to that perception of higher inflation. Now, let me be clear about higher inflation. I am not talking 8, 10 Zimbabwe. I'm not talking that inflation. I'm talking 3, maybe 4% consistent inflation. Sure, you'll have some periods at 2, you'll have some periods at 5 or 6, but you'll average somewhere in the 3 to 4 range. If that's the case, then let's take a midpoint of 3. The Fed has already told us they think that the neutral funds rate is 50 basis points over inflation. That's 3.5. So that's 3.5 funds rate, where 5.5 were restrictive. But if the yield curve normalizes, it's inverted now, and that's not a normal state. It usually should be the 10-year should trade 150 basis points over the funds rate in a normal curve environment. That puts fair value at 5 on the 10-year note. We're 4.30. So we're still expensive on the 30-year at this point, and I think it's going up. Ultimately, it's going to go up over a long period of time because the yield curve is still inverted, and it's going to take a while before it uninverts. And ultimately, we'll have to see if that call, that 3%, is kind of the long run average of inflation now, not 2, really comes out, comes to bear. Last thing for you, the yield curve has been steepening or getting less inverted. That's a fancy term. What does that mean? That means that long rates, the 10 and 30 year yields, are rising faster than short rates. And that's why it's getting less inverted. Why are they rising faster? I would contend to you that the Fed is talking about being done. Maybe there's one more rate hike. Maybe there isn't. And they're being done. And that the marketplace is signaling to us, if you're not serious about the fight on inflation, I don't want to own your 10-year note. You want to get aggressive on raising short rates. And then we could talk about a peak, an intermediate peak in the 10-year note, maybe pull back in yields, and you'd want to be long TLT. And what would cause that is, if you're going to keep raising rates, you're on the inflation fight. And if you're going to keep raising rates, you risk breaking something. And I want to be long bonds in case the day something breaks, because there'll be a big flight to quality. But if you're not going to continue to raise rates, you're not fighting inflation, and you're not going to break something, I don't want to own the 10-year note if the long-term value on that, or fair value on that, is 5%. So that's kind of the short course on where I think rates are and how the curve plays into that. Inflation, my take on inflation real quick is, like I said, 2020, we started a new economic cycle. The biggest thing about this economic cycle is remote work. Before 2020, the average person was home 2 days a week, Saturday, Sunday. Now they're home 4 days a week. They work in the office 3, they're home 2. You've doubled the amount of time you're at home, you've changed your lifestyle. And because you've changed your lifestyle, you've changed your consumption basket. And we're still struggling to figure out what that new consumption basket is, so everything's out of balance. And that is leading to frictions, and that is leading to persistently higher inflation. And it's going to take some time before we get everything back into balance. So that's my bear case for bonds. And that's the case I've been on for bonds now for a couple of years. Last thought for you. What I'm arguing is a continuation of the last 2 years. The last 2 years has been marked by people saying the Fed's going to pause. They're going to step down. They're going to skip. They're not going to raise rates as much as everybody thinks. And all of that has been wrong. And what they are arguing is the same thing. Fed's going to pause. They're done. They're going to cut rates next year. That's the one we got now. And so I'm arguing a continuation of underestimating the resolve of Jay Powell to raise rates. We can argue whether that's good or bad, but I think that that's really where he's going with this.
Okay. Thank you for that. My feeling is that is its narrative, Jim. It's a well-articulated piece of narrative, okay? But narrative actually has to have foundation stones, okay? And inflation is something that we can speak to, the concept and the mechanism which allows and facilitates inflation is a very real thing that we can observe, yeah? And we've been doing so for many, many decades. And we have this notion that inflation is a monetary phenomenon. Right, so I'm going to persevere. My complaint about the inflation being an enduring and this notion of it being something like a Rolling Stones world concert tour and being sticky, it does require stickiness or pervasiveness in the risk-seeking behavior of loan officers across all of the financial institutions of the United States. And there's two things going on. And one of the things, because you absolutely hit it, and I have to confess to my sins, I was one of those people going, oh my God, the rapid nature of the hiking cycle and the magnitude of it were something that caused me a sense of foreboding. And the analytical error that I have to confess to, of course, is this is a hiking cycle like we've never experienced. I mean, the private sector of the United States immunized itself from the Federal Reserve. You know, it took a big injection. It wasn't just the coronavirus, it was Federal Reserve hiking that we got a vaccine for, right? Yeah, which was everyone fixed in late 2020.
Yeah, you know, and as far as the foreboding goes, that was well founded, and that was actually rewarded because when the Fed started raising rates, the S&P fell 25% by October, and the bond market had its worst year ever. So if you had a sense of foreboding about the markets, you were rewarded for most of 2022 on that. 2023, as you pointed out, is we found out that the economy has been somewhat inoculated against those rate hikes, unless you want to argue they haven't been enough. And that maybe why we are restrictive, we're not restrictive enough. And that's what the market is trying to tell us is with the rise in rates. I mean, you know, we've got a new 16-year high in the 10-year note the day we're speaking. That is that there's still more or higher interest rates to come. And in a bigger picture, the fundamentals and starting with inflation play into that. So you weren't punished for having that view for most of 2022.
Okay, right. So I was saying to you that, you know, gold has had this price barrier of 2000, and we hit it and we come back, we hit it and we come back. And I think you're right that the rapid nature of the Fed's hiking was that barrier. You know, the Fed kept going, normally when I press this interest rate button, things happen. And it's going, nothing's happening. We got to raise. Okay, so I'm cognizant of that. But the other factor you mentioned is the bond market, because whilst the inversion has narrowed, it's still a very prominent inversion. And so it's still the banking sector saying, you're going to break something. And in breaking, there is a relevant justification for the notion of breakage, because whilst you have immunized essentially the private sector or components of, you know, the private sector in the United States, you've done so by transferring a risk, interest rate risk on the pricing of the mortgage stock, you know, and other corporate loans was transferred to the capital markets. Okay. But a risk, and it's a substantial risk, you know, that's a, you know, the stock of loans which were originated the last 10 years under a different price regime, yeah, now imply there's a profound loss sitting with other economic agents. And again, that's what we began to see. That's what we began to see with the bankruptcies of some of those regional banks in March. Now, the force creating that, the higher yields, has continued. The unrealized losses have continued. And so the manifestation of that is a pullback in credit provision or creation. You speak, because I'm going to scream with the mute button.
Yeah, no, you're right, because I would argue to you that there's been a big bifurcation in the market. The credit standards by the banks have really tightened quite a bit. And you've seen a gigantic rise in spreads that banks are offering their customers, but you've not seen that in the corporate bond market. Corporate bond market is still offering relatively and absolutely more attractive rates. Now, the problem with that is that banks are really the financial services conduit for small and medium-sized businesses. Small businesses can't just go issue a 144A shelf and then issue a corporate bond. That's a large business that can do that. So this tightening of bank standards is really starting to hurt on the lower end. And you can also see that in the stock market. we all know the S&P is up like 14-15% in the year, and the Magnificent Seven, as they're calling them, is like 2/3 of that gain. And the other 493 stocks are up like 2.5% this year. But if you look at the Russell 2000, it's only up a couple percent. And then there's another index called the Microcap, which is actually the bottom 1,000 of the Russell 2000. That index actually turned down on the year yesterday. So those very small companies, which are more reliant on banks, which I would argue is more economically sensitive, those companies are really struggling. Now, they're not doing terrible. I mean, they're unchanged on the year, but compared to the S&P, that's huge. But those companies, I think, are telling you that, yes, there is an inoculation of what we saw with interest rates. But it's really at the high end is where that is. It's up at the high end. The lower end companies are really struggling with this higher rate regime, and it's really there for you. So that's kind of my take on that. But can I back you up a second? I want to ask you a question about gold. I have found gold to be the single most frustrating asset of the last couple of years. As I like to joke, everything Peter Schiff ever hoped for in gold has happened, times two, and it can't break 2000. What are we waiting for on gold right now? What haven't we had besides the end of the world, besides war, besides inflation? What are we waiting for now on gold? Why can't it go now? And if not now, when?
Yeah, I mean, the amazing Peter Schiff. But aren't you concerned? Well, I mean, the problem with gold is gold requires zero to negative real interest rates. And this environment is the antithesis of that. You know, we've got very, very positive, very rich real rates. And like you say, there's still this notion that the Fed may not be over. Like the notion of a very sharp pivot that we saw in September 2007 is very unlikely, because I call them the suits, but you know, there's so many. I'm searching for the right. There's so many people that I find very uninspiring, but they command intellectual thought columns in the financial press, right? And they have convinced themselves on the parallel with the 70s, and therefore Jay is terrified of going down as Arthur Burns when he wants to be Paul Volcker. Okay. And that's so my concern is, I get now they had to go to where they'd gone. They had to go there rapidly because of the immunization of the private sector. But I don't see the follow through in money creation, which can actually facilitate and persist with the wage gains, which I think make up your stickiness of inflation moving forward. I mean, I want those wage gains. The world is suffering from insufficient demand, by and large, because the return on labor has been so poor relative to the return on capital. But if you're not getting private financial credit expansion in the U.S., where's the inflation coming from, Jim?
So let me talk to you about money growth. M2, just to use a measure, there's many of them, is things that the Federal Reserve says is liquid and readily spendable. That's what goes into M2. I think the public has a different definition of liquid and readily spendable. The public thinks that their brokerage account holding spiders is liquid and readily spendable. That's not part of M2. The public thinks that their retirement funds are liquid and readily spendable. That's not part of M2. Now, maybe it shouldn't be part of M2. M2 doesn't include various types of money market funds. The public thinks any money market fund is liquid and readily spendable. So I wonder if the problem with money or the monetary aggregates, inflation is everywhere and always a monetary phenomenon, Milton Friedman, he's right. But monetary money, what is money? Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, nowhere to be found in that definition. Maybe it should be. And that we don't really understand what money is. How about unrealized gains in equities? Is that considered money? A lot of people consider that money. is that is so if you start adding back all these other categories that people think are money, all of a sudden the tightness of monetary policy doesn't look as bad as it initially does on the 1970s definition of what money is, and that's M2. Would be nice if we still had M3. They don't calculate that anymore because a lot of those other categories would have been in M3. And it would have been even better if they used to have a measure going back 20 or 30 years, M4. Be even better if they still had that. But we don't have those measures anymore. So I don't know what money is. I agree with the concept, but the failing on that concept is what exactly constitutes money?
But I think I'm going to help you here then, because the monetary aggregate price, the monetary aggregate series that we're all familiar with, right, are one side of the banking sector's ledger. Yeah, we're talking about the liabilities of the U.S. financial banking system. Okay, that's the deposits. Okay, and they are financed or created by credit, which is new loan origination. Okay. The new loan origination is the material, if you will, is the monetary quantum which allows for a $25 trillion economy to have prices which can be 7-8% greater than the previous year, and yet there is the monetary accommodation for all of that expenditure to take place and facilitate those higher prices. Okay, that's what's not happening. The M2 series does not measure credit expansion. Credit expansion, I'm sure you know, is either flat or now it's actually draining. It's negative year over year. And we're in a world where the three components of GDP growth are population growth, productivity growth, and debt growth. And so all the heavy lifting is debt growth. And if you don't have debt growth, you don't have GDP growth, which is to say, you know, at the nominal level, you don't have the price or the price inflation stickiness that supports that higher nominal GDP. And therefore, we potentially could record recession.
So you're right. You're right. That credit growth, you know, the creation of a loan is what creates a deposit, which is what creates money. And what's been holding that back has been what I refer to as the bank walk. Banks have still, the average bank, according to Bankrate in the United States, is still giving you something like 60 basis points on your bank account. Well, you can get 5% plus in a money market fund. And banks, for the last 12 years, have, and I'm holding up my phone, have been pushing people towards mobile banking. 120 million people in the United States use a mobile banking app once a month. And what people are starting to realize is a couple of minutes on my phone, I could move my money from my Chase bank account to my Chase securities account to a Chase money market. I pick up thousands of dollars a year in interest income. And they're doing that. And they're doing that in massive numbers. Why didn't they do that previous cycles? Because before mobile banking, it was a pain in the ass to do that. You had to go into the bank and fill out a bunch of paperwork, and no one bothered with it. But now they're doing it. So banks are seeing constant withdrawal of deposits. They have rules, loan to deposit ratios, capital ratios and stuff that restrict how much lending they want. Why are banks tightening lending standards? Because they've got this bank walk, this deposit bleed that is pulling money out of a traditional bank and it's putting it into a money market fund outside of the banking system. Still a financial asset, but outside the financial system. What's the fix? Raise your deposit rates. Raise your deposit rates and keep that money in the banking system. Why don't they do it? It hits their profitability because that cheap money is their profitability. So it's like, it gets back to what I was saying before, the money's still there. It's just in different forms, money market funds as opposed to bank deposits. And it is restricting the credit growth for now, but not necessarily forever. It could come back and you could see that credit growth come back, which would be more deposits, which would see money growth. So I tend to look at this as being more cyclical than something secular. And yes, that money that money pullback, you've seen it. We were at 9% inflation a year ago. We're at 3.2% inflation now. So it has had its impact. But if it's cyclical, we might be closer to a low in that than a high. Maybe the banks are coming around to finally, they are finally, some of the banks are starting to raise their deposit rates to kind of stem the constant outflow of deposits to T-bills or to money market funds.
Well, indeed, but I mean, this sounds like a very supporting case for why the inflation regime of the last 2 years is fated to be brief, because the monetary agents that facilitate inflation have been subject to this fundamental breach of their business model. You know, the Fed had to raise rates so quickly, the banks cannot match it because it would destroy their profitability. And they're also sitting with the impairment of huge amounts of their asset base owing to the change in interest rates. So there's no appetite for the financial accommodation. Money that is held in a money market fund is not money that's going to be used as collateral to support risky lending elsewhere in the economy.
Right.
And but so tell me.
I was just going to say the retort to that is only about one-third of credit creation in the United States comes from the banks now. It used to be a lot more. The other two-thirds comes from the capital markets. So while we talked about banks creating deposits, you know, bank approves a loan, and what happens when they approve a loan? You get a bank account and they put the money in your bank account. Boom, they just created some money. You can do that away from the bank, and that is you could call Goldman Sachs, and then Goldman Sachs will give you help you float do a bond flotation. And there, you just raised some money, and you created credit, and you created money in that form as well. And that is the majority form of how money is created right now in the United States. So banks are still critically important, but they're not the sole creator like they were, say, 30 or 40 years ago. And that other form is still there, and you still have that money creation going on, especially if you start looking at it more globally, and especially when you start adding in governments, because they've been creating debt like crazy. They've been creating their forms of money like crazy. In the post-financial crisis era, debt growth among governments or sovereigns has just been exploding higher, and that's where a lot of the money creation is coming from.
I still don't see that as money creation. You know, when it's...
To watch the rest of the video, please join the tribe at patreon.com/HughHendry. Thank you and goodbye.